European leaders, even before the creation of the European Union, have long been trying to harness the strength of a united Europe. But one such initiative stands out.
The single market is the most important achievement of the European Union. It was created some years ago, and it creates the biggest market in the world. But at that time, the world was absolutely smaller than today. So the world has completely changed. I am Enrico Letta. I am currently the Dean of the School of Politics, Economics and Global Affairs at IEE University in Madrid and the President of the Jacques Delors Institute in Paris. I'm Italian.
In fact, Enrico Letta was the Prime Minister of Italy for a year, starting in 2013. He has since become an influential figure in European policy and a champion of the single market, with his recent landmark report titled Much More Than a Market. I caught up with Enrico Letta while he was in Washington, D.C. to meet up with IMF European Department Head Alfred Kammer and Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva. Thank you so much for joining the podcast.
It's a pleasure.
All right. So you've been very vocal on the need for Europe to adapt to the new economics and the new politics through the single market. Yourself, as well as Mario Draghi, another former Italian prime minister, have presented reports with suggestions on how to pursue that. So what does Europe, in your opinion, need to do to make it work better?
So the decision that the European leaders took when they created the single market to limit the single market to some fields and not to the entire economic space was a decision that today we are paying in terms of lack of competitiveness because the world has changed at the same time, in the same period. And we, the Europeans, on three fundamental fields for competitiveness: energy, connectivity, financial markets, we are not one, but we are 27. And this fragmentation on energy, on connectivity and financial markets is the big contradiction of the European Union, because we have one currency and 27 financial markets. We are not able to manage with one voice, with one single market, crucial topics like connectivity, telecommunication, innovation, energy. So the big evolution of the world, the rise of China, India, they weren't there as giants 30 years ago. And today they are there. And the fact that Europe is not one, but 27 in these fields is, in my view, the true reason of the lack of competitiveness. And on the other side is the true reason of the dependencies. Europe is very dependent. And in the world in which we are today, being dependent is not a good idea.
You're right.
So we have to work to be more independent, to strengthen our strategic autonomy, and to complete the single market. This is, in my view, the only recipe for the future of Europe.
Mm. So introducing new ideas, changing economic policy in even the smallest of countries with simple government structures is always difficult. How would you characterize the sort of political process in Europe with, you know, its diverse collection of countries with all their different needs and wants?
I have to use two words. Mm-hmm. One word is today a word very à la mode, is security. Today, security is a topic that was not the center of the world some years ago. Today, it is the center of everything. And it is clear that the fragmented European Union in this world of today is not able to ensure security in the different member states. Mm. People are aware of that, and people are asking for more integration and more security. This is the first big topic. You know, I take the example of Denmark.
Yeah.
Denmark was with the UK 35 years ago, the country that negotiated the opt-out. The opt-out was a technical, institutional tool that the UK and Denmark negotiated to being very clear and very relaxed in being within the European Union without being in the European Union.
Right.
And for the UK, we know what happened, the exit. and for Denmark, today, with what is happening with Greenland and what is happening with the US, with Russia to Ukraine, today Denmark is a country that is totally forgetting the opt-out. It's totally on board of a more European integration. So security is one topic. And the second topic is the fact that we are, because of our fragmentation in the fields I mentioned before, we are sending as gift jobs in the US, in China, in other countries out of Europe. The fragmentation is a cost and has a cost. The cost is we are sending jobs. Take the defense industry fragmentation. We helped and we have to continue to help Ukraine. But helping Ukraine and buying military furniture for them means for Europe buying non-European military furniture, because we don't have the scale of our defense industry to buy military furniture immediately available. And so we spent a lot of money from the European taxpayers to create jobs in Michigan, Pennsylvania, or in Asia. Is the demonstration that fragmentation and the lack of completion of the single market is not just a boring topic.
Yeah.
It means jobs, investment, capacity to attract investments. There's all this discussion about the legal framework of the European Union, too fragmented, 27 different corporate laws, sub-national corporate laws, regional. For international investors, is a mess. This is why in the report, in all the proposals, there's a part creating a more simplified, integrated legal system, this idea of the 28 regime, that is the idea to create a sort of fast track for investments. So these are the two topics.
And when you talk about fragmentation, how would you begin to address that fragmentation within the European Union to make Europe stronger as a consortium of countries rather than...
I give you an example. When Europe is not fragmented, Europe wins. Take the aeronautic industry. There's one Airbus. There are not 27 Airbus.
Right.
If we had 27 Airbus, the Polish Airbus, the Italian Airbus, the Swedish Airbus, Boeing would be the dominator. We have one Airbus, and it was a political choice. It was not a market choice when they created Airbus. And today nobody can say Airbus is French or Spanish or German or Swedish. Airbus is European at the end of the day. So there are topics, fields like this one, where fragmentation bring you in the weakness, in the defeat, and integration gives you the scale to win. This is, in my view, the main example that we can do, because it's an example based on an industry where innovation and technological development is fundamental. And today we think that everything is technologically developed, innovation is coming from China or from the US. And in reality, we, the Europeans, were very good when we have the scale to do so. And the scale is absolutely fundamental today.
So you are, in other words, worried that technology such as AI, the development of these technologies are happening mostly, to a great degree anyway, outside of Europe.
Is a problem of, once again, scale and money. Mm-hmm. Because to get these great evolutions, you need scale and you need money. If you have only money that is, how we say, nation fragmented based, with the European fragmentation and not at the scale of the European level as it is in China and the US, is very complicated to be successful and is one of the reasons why we are lagging behind. This is why in the report I put at the center the integration of the financial markets. We have 27 financial markets and we are not able to scale on finance. And that is helping a lot the US to be, how we say, the center of everything. Why don't we integrate our financial market and scale on that? That will help innovation too.
And so one of the things that Europe is highly regarded for, always has been, is its social welfare system. How do you see that in the world of a single market?
First of all, the social system, the social model, the welfare that we have in Europe, in reality, is a welfare that is very differentiated. You have, because welfare is the typical field where the national competences are more important than the European one for treaty reason. Member states decided to say welfare is for us, like education. There are fields where, or like healthcare, these topics are, first of all, national competences. And you have more generous countries, less generous countries, countries with a more modern welfare, countries with a less modern welfare. So, in reality, this is one important topic. On welfare is mostly a topic related to national competences and national decisions. And the national decisions are very much influenced by the fiscal capacity of the countries. So countries with a big debt are countries that are not allowed to be too generous in terms of welfare. At the same time, Europe is experiencing a decrease of fertility and big aging society problem. And at the same time, the only way to solve it is to be very generous in helping women working. And to do so, we need to put money. And if we don't have money because of fiscal restraint, it will be very complicated to be, I would say, in the long term, successful on the aging society issues and so on. So is one of the most delicate problems because of this mix between national competences and European competences. But you correctly mentioned it as one main issue for Europe. But also for a very simple reason, is one of the, I would say, attractiveness of Europe.
Yeah.
Because it is clear that today, for instance, China is facing a big problem because their welfare is totally different. And if you have a welfare that is not, I would say, giving you certainties for your future, which is the consequence, you save money. Mm. You're not spending money. And if this behavior becomes the rule, it has big problems in macroeconomic terms. So at the end of the day, I think we have to be aware that European welfare system is a social model, is an asset for Europe. We have to preserve it, to modernize it, but to consider also the fact that this process needs to be considered together with the main topic, politically very challenging, of the integration of migrations. That is the other key issue for Europe today.
Yeah, and I guess the increasingly populist political environment is not helping. So you're a man with several hats. You're the president of the Jacques Delors Institute, which is a very influential European think tank. But you're also the Dean of Madrid's IE School of Economics and Global Affairs. What made you want to pursue roles in both the political as well as the educational side of things?
I like very much working with students, first of all. It is the way to, I would say, to be obliged to to be always refreshed by new ideas, new behaviors. At the same time, I think education is one of the most changing and challenging sectors. The globalization of the educational market, first of all, the high education systems, is something that is very interesting. What is happening in the US with big discussions on autonomy of universities, how to be financed, the policies of visas, that is a big uncertainty, is, for instance, giving a great chance to European universities. And we are trying to be there in the market and to say to the world market of students, come to Europe, come here. We, for instance, in Madrid, we created this institution that is a totally global institution. Everything is in English, and IE today is an institution that is working to attract students from everywhere and at the same time to be present in different places, because we have a campus in New York City, for instance, is the demonstration of what does it mean being global. So I mention that because I find fascinating in this period of our time working on education. It's something that is fascinating because you feel what will be the world of tomorrow. And the world of tomorrow will be a world more integrated than the one we have today. And so I feel, discussing with students, how contradictory is the political debate that we are experiencing in all our countries, that is all based on identities, on borders, and so on. And we have all the new generations that in reality are more connected, more integrated, and living in a more globalized world.
And so when you talk about the European single market, where does education fit into that? I mean, do you believe, I've heard you talk about the lack of a European diploma. I mean, do you believe that these young Europeans should study and pursue their careers in Europe rather than going abroad?
But you know, when you have to mention one flagship of the single market, we all use the famous symbolism of Erasmus. Erasmus, the greatest success maybe of the European integration, is the, how we say, most iconic outcome of the single market. And today we have to consider that we need to continue in the direction of what Erasmus did. You mentioned the European diploma. The European diploma is a need, is a must. We are spending so much time, so much money, so much energy at the European level, in the different member states, in the universities, in families, because of the lack of a European diploma. Mutual recognition is a mess, and it's totally absurd. The same is for the lack of the status of researcher, that is absolutely fundamental. So there's room on these topics really to move in the direction of new tools, form of integrations that can be really very successful and very attractive for people. Because at the end of the day, the single market is not a boring topic for researchers of economy. It's daily life. The single market is daily life.
And I found it interesting today in your talk at the IMF, you mentioned moving to Madrid for in your role as the dean of the school, and having to get a utility service, and being completely surprised about how you needed to have a Spanish bank account and a Spanish phone number to complete that process.
You know, it's what is happening in all our countries. If you want to live in one country, you need to have a bank account of a national bank and a telephone number of a national operator. Yeah. In all European countries like that, and it's a mess.
Yeah.
Because it is the way for each country to protect his own, how we say, champions, bank or telecom operator, but is the way to refrain the possibility to have the Airbus of banks, the Airbus of telecom, and so on. So when I say our problem is the fragmentation, I say that we have to overcome it, and we have to be able to build up tools that are more effective, bigger, and scale is the issue.
And finally, maybe going back to our at the beginning of this conversation, talking about the importance of Europe adapting to the new economic and political realities, do you see the international financial institutions, like the one that you're sitting in today, do you see that they could be perhaps better adapting to that reality as well?
They are threatened by the present situation. They are under pressure. I think we have to preserve them, defend them. I saw during the preparation of my report on the European single market the strength, the credibility, and the importance of an institution like the IMF. The numbers, the figures, the credibility, the right targets. It was really, for me, very useful, positive. And the voice of the IMF in pushing the European countries to accept the integration of the single market as something that is beneficial for them is a fundamental role. So I think in this moment, it's time to stand for preserving the international organizations. Their role is absolutely fundamental. They are incontournable, as the French say.
Enrico Letta is the former Prime Minister of Italy and now heading both the Jacques Delors Institute and the IE School of Economics and Global Affairs in Madrid. Thank you so much. Merci.
Thank you very much.
Again, that was Enrico Letta, former Prime Minister of Italy and author of a landmark report on Europe's single market titled Much More Than a Market. Look for other IMF podcasts on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. You can also follow us on X. Our handle is at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.